side, and there was land exposed, and there we found plants and collected those, and they all date 6,300 years in age. So it tells us that it took back 6,000 years ago, it took 1,600 years for the ice to advance from that far shore to capture the plants on the near shore. And it's only taken 25 years for that ice to retreat back to where it is today. So those plants tell us that this ice cap has not been smaller than today for over 6,300 years. So it really gives us a perspective on the climate change that is occurring there today.
And there are some dramatic photos as part of the study, as part of your research, where you can even see with the naked eye that retreat of the glacier and the land, the part of the mountains that are exposed.
Yes. I mean, having had the opportunity to go there and re-photograph these sites and to document the formation of lakes that didn't exist when I was a graduate student, really makes for very striking visuals of the change that's taken place in that environment.
In addition to some of these global concerns that you're mentioning, the increase in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, or the indications about climate change, in a more local sense, a current issue is that the glaciers are vital water sources for people in the Andean communities. Is there concern for people in urban areas like Lima or La Paz or rural communities?
Yeah, so I think that if I was to look at a country that is most at immediate risk from climate change, it would be Peru, because it contains 70% of the world's tropical glaciers, and many of those serve the rivers that provide water for hydroelectric power, for irrigation, and for municipal water supplies. And so as those glaciers shrink, those water supplies become more undependable, especially in the dry season. And this is what makes that part of the world so sensitive, is that, you know, there's a wet season, but there's a very distinct dry season in June, July, and August, where there's hardly any precipitation in the mountains, and the discharge in the rivers depends on the melting of those glaciers. So in the big scheme for the country of Peru, this is an extremely important issue. But even if you go down to the local area around the Quillcaya ice cap, we've seen lakes form over the last 30 years, and we've seen them disappear in a matter of a year. As the ice retreats to higher elevations, it allows new drainage channels to form, and one valley might become flooded from the extra water, whereas the valley that the lake used to drain into dries up, and the alpaca moss dies, and the locals no longer can graze their livestock in that valley.
So even in the immediate vicinity around the glacier, there are local communities living there, adjusting as these lakes are reappearing and vanishing?
Yes, and to me, for them, you know, climate change is in the here and now. They have to deal with it on a daily basis as far as their water resources and ability to irrigate in order to create pasture land for their livestock.
Lonnie Thompson is glaciologist at Ohio State University and lead author of a report on the Quillcaya ice cap in the Andes, published in Science Magazine. Dr. Thompson, thanks for speaking with us.
Well, thanks very much, Doreen.
In a case that has spanned decades and international borders, a judge in India has ordered the reopening of a probe into a senior politician's connection to killing of Sikhs more than 25 years ago in Delhi. The court has also directed the investigating authorities to take testimonies of three witnesses who now live in the United States. But the witnesses say they have no confidence in the investigating agency, the Central Bureau of Investigation. FSRN Salim Rizvi has more.
The case is related to the killing of three people during the 1984 anti-Sikh riots in Delhi. An earlier investigation by India's Central Bureau of Investigation, or CBI, cleared senior leader of the Congress Party, Jagdish Taitler, stating there was a lack of evidence. In 2010, a magistrate had accepted the CBI's request to close the case against Taitler and did not put him on trial. But now, Delhi Court Judge Anuradha Bharadwaj has ordered investigators to reopen the probe. The judge said the CBI should re-examine several witnesses. One of them is Jasbir Singh, who now lives in San Francisco. He says he's frustrated by the delay in case.
For the last 29 years, it has been a game of hide-and-seek between the court and the CBI, and no case has been registered against Jagdish Taitler yet. The court can reject our testimonies, but who has given the power to the CBI to clear Taitler of charges?
Taitler is accused of inciting a mob leading to the killings at the Sikh House of Worship, Gurdwara Pulbangash. The investigating agency had said in court that Jagdish Taitler was not present near the Gurdwara on November 1, 1984, when the killings took place. Instead, the agency says that he was in the residence of slain Prime Minister Indira Gandhi, known as Teen Murti House. Indira Gandhi was assassinated by her Sikh bodyguards on October 31, 1984, which was followed by widespread anti-Sikh riots. Jasbir Singh had earlier testified to a CBI team in San Francisco in 2008. Singh claims he saw Taitler addressing a large mob near the Gurdwara and complaining to them that they have not killed enough Sikhs yet. Singh says he is ready to go to India to testify again, but says he fears for his life.
I am ready to appear in any court in India and testify about what I saw and heard on that day. I will perform my duty of telling the truth to the court, but I want a guarantee from authorities for the safety of my life, as one witness was earlier killed after he went to India from the U.S., and no post-mortem was performed on his body.
The petitioners for reopening the case claim that the CBI has ignored material evidence against Taitler, but the CBI has questioned the authenticity of many witnesses in the case, including Jasbir Singh. The witnesses, three of whom live in the U.S., say they don't trust the CBI. Gurpatwant Panun is their attorney.
No, we have no hope on CBI. They have been acting as the defense team for the Taitler and other Congress leaders who participated in the mass killing of Sikhs amounting to genocide. They are playing the game of hide and seek between the CBI and the Indian judicial system. We do not trust and we have no faith on them.
The politician, Jagdish Taitler, has said there was no evidence to prove that he was present at the scene of killings. But the opposition parties in India accused the ruling Congress party of misusing the CBI to absolve Taitler. Salim Rizvi, FSRN, New York.
It has to start somewhere. It has to start sometime. What better place than here? What better time than now?
What's your contribution going to be? What problems are you going to solve? What discoveries will you make?
I intend to broadcast from this ship 24 hours a day until the day I die. And then for a couple days after that.
No one's written your destiny for you. You make your own future.
I've always lived for news and weather. Happy to dive for them too. Especially the weather.
WMPG is on the air thanks to listener donations and generous support from the University of Southern Maine. USM educates Maine's future artists, business people, engineers, healthcare professionals, lawyers, managers, public servants, scientists, and teachers. More information is available at usm.maine.edu.
Blunt wishes to thank the following sponsors and partners: the A.R. Gould School at Long Creek Youth Development Center, the Filene Foundation, Terrascope Youth Radio at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Youth Radio from Youth Media International in Oakland, California, and Blunt is also funded in part by a grant from the Maine Arts Commission, an independent state agency funded by the National Endowment for the Arts.
The views expressed on Blunt are those of the individual speakers and producers and not those of the University of Southern Maine or WMPG management. Blunt Youth Radio welcomes opposing views.
Going to jail is life-changing. When the judge gave me 2 years until I'm 19 years old, I felt hopeless. My mother, which was behind me in the courtroom, broke down in tears as I was shackled.
Hello, we're Blunt Youth Radio, bringing you a fresh youth perspective every week on our public affairs call-in talk show. Tonight, we are lucky enough to bring even more perspective to the table with our friends at Long Creek Youth Development Center. We'll be sharing their stories from incarcerated youth all night. I'm Iris Sangiovanni, a senior Blunt member, and hosting with me is
Hassan, a resident from Long Creek. I'm happy to be here, and I want to take this time to shout out to my friends, Major, AJ, Mad Dog, Isaiah, Zachariah, and to all my brothers locked up. I'd like to remind you that this is a call-in show. Our number is 780-4909. Again, 780-4909. Call in with any questions or comments. Being locked up really sucks, but sometimes you can learn a lesson. That's what really happened with this first piece, Corey.
All right, and now we're going to be listening to his piece.
Going to jail is life-changing. When the judge gave me 2 years until I'm 19 years old, I felt hopeless. My mother, which was behind me in the courtroom, broke down in tears as I was shackled and taken away in a prison van. When I first got here, I was very depressed. I felt like I was about to waste a year or two of my life in jail. As a certain amount of time went by, I started to realize that maybe coming here was a good thing after all. My dad and I now have a better relationship than we've ever had, which is awesome. I've noticed that our relationship has changed, and I was curious to see what he thought about that. What do you think of our relationship?
Well, our relationship now is really good, I think. It never was in the past. It was a terrible relationship, even though we loved each other. Now that you've grown up and you've become more of an adult and more mature, and we're very close. And I'm glad that I have a relationship like I have with my son, because I know a lot of fathers and sons and a lot of people don't have that type of relationship of honesty and friends. We're good friends, and I really thank God for the relationship that we have right now.
How do you feel about me before it came to jail?
Well, that's a really touchy question, because I had a lot of mixed feelings about you, Corey. I had no good feelings about you. Your future didn't look very well at all, and as a person, you had a lot of bad qualities. I couldn't trust you. How I felt about you, I was really, really, really worried about you and very concerned.
Was it hard for you to call the cops on me?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's the last thing you ever want to do to, want it to come to that. But I didn't see any other alternative, and it was very hard to call the cops on my son. That's the last thing you want to do, is turn your son into the police. But I'm glad that I did it. Next time it wouldn't be so hard, because the results is exactly what I wanted. I have my son back.
How has me coming to jail impacted our relationship?
Well, I guess we covered that already. There's been a lot of improvement, and it's made it a better relationship. I think now there's a more honesty in our relationship now, and trust in our relationship now, because I think our relationship is very improved.
Are you proud of the changes I've been making here at Long Creek?
Very, very proud of the changes you've made here. I am so impressed. I never even thought that you would come this far in such a short period of time, Corey. When you came here, I was as depressed as you were. I mean, I had to look at you and see how much you were suffering in here, but I knew you had to be here. You did what you needed to do and change and realize that, yes, it's your fault you're in here, and you're going to have to change yourself. And you have, and I'm very, very proud of you right now.
Thanks to Long Creek, I can now come out a better person, which is what my dad always wanted. As long as he's happy, I'm happy. And my dad being proud of me makes me motivated that much more. For Blunt Youth Radio, from Long Creek Youth Development Center, this is Corey.
Again, that was Corey, and we have him in studio to talk about his piece.
We also have his parents, Gary and Lori, on the phone. In the many shows that I've been able to be a part of with Long Creek Youth Development Center, it's not often that we get an opportunity to hear from the parents' perspective. So with that said, Gary, this piece, is basically all about you. So, how did you feel hearing this piece that your son Corey did?
I'm impressed and surprised. I don't know what else to say, kind of in shock, but it's very, very good.
All right. And I would echo that, well done, Corey. It was talked about in the piece, your father's really proud of you and he has your support. Has that helped you through, this process?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Why wouldn't it? When you hear your son talk like that, it was all worth it. And it's just good to hear him talk like that. It really is.
All right. And Lori, you were also mentioned in the piece a little bit, but how have you played a role in your son's life while he's been incarcerated, and how have you seen Gary and Corey's relationship grow?
Yes, absolutely. For my son. I feel, that I wish that I could be there for him more. I do not drive long distances, and I wish that he was closer to me so I could talk to him and become closer with him. I love him very much. I am so happy that he has this opportunity from the state of Maine and Long Creek to help him, and I'm glad that he is progressing in such a manner. I can't tell you how happy I am and how he's gone in as a boy, and that was just last year, and I feel that he's turned into a man very quickly, and I'm very happy, and I thank Long Creek.
And so, Corey, hearing, this from, both your parents, I mean, they obviously have support and love you. How have you taken that into your work at Long Creek?
I guess it's helped me a lot, to get through it, to have their support. It's helped me quite a bit, and it's nice to have parents that actually, care about you, because sometimes, some kids don't have that, so it's really helped me a lot. It's helped me get through everything, so.
Yeah, kids, whether incarcerated or not, often don't always have the support from their parents, and
yeah.
That's really important. Hassan, any thoughts?
Yeah. I would just like to ask Corey, when you first got arrested, how did you feel about your dad calling the cops on you?
Yeah, he and I both know, I was upset with him, and I thought it was, I thought he was snitching on me and stuff like that. I didn't really take it too good, But now that, I've had time to realize and, have a clear mind and everything, I know it was my fault, and I'm actually glad that he did that, because, look what he's done to me. He's helped me out so much that, I could have never been this way without him doing that. So, I'm really glad that it happened. So, I thank him a lot, and,
Mm-hmm. And it shows. I just wanted to take this time once again, just to remind everyone listening that this is a call-in show. The number is 780-4909. Again, that's 780-4909. And we are talking to Corey, and his parents, Lori and Gary. Corey, what was it like interviewing your dad? I mean, because I know you guys have a really good relationship now, but when you put in a mic there, it can kind of be a little nerve-wracking. I don't know, what was your experience?
It was all right at first, and then, I played it back a couple times myself. It was a little touchy, you know what I'm saying, just to hear, what he thought deep down inside and everything. But, I mean, it was, for the most part, it was awesome. He's awesome and everything. So, I mean, I'm so glad that our relationship is the way it is now. I mean, me coming here, you would have never thought that it would have got better like this. But, I mean, it's got 100% better, and that's awesome. And I know he knows it too, so we can have a good life together, you know what I'm saying? I've always wanted to have that relationship with him, but I've always just had, too much going on and not enough time to think straight and just doing stupid things. So, I'm glad that it happened. So, yeah.
That's great. Yeah. And Gary, what was it like being, interviewed by your son?
I was kind of hesitant at first. I'm more like, what's this going to be like? And where is this going? And I didn't know it was going to be even like this. So, to be interviewed by him and the way he carried it out and the way he did it, I was very impressed with that. I thought it was great. And when he told me it was going to be on the radio, I thought it was even going to be better. This is awesome. This is great that Corey get a chance to do this.
Mm-hmm. And I know, I always love these stories that I hear, when you hear like just about people, like changing their life and changing it around for the better. And that brings us, that brings me to ask, Hassan, how has your experience been at Long Creek? Do you think, do you feel like you've changed as a person, or you're working to change, or what are your thoughts, Hassan?
I feel this place has really helped me a lot. I've grown as a person because when I first came, it was really like, oh, I'm going to jail. I'm going to go do my time like a man. But now I thought it was like, oh, it's a place that could help you. It's being Long Creek. I've gone my GED. I'm working on going to college and getting a job. And I'm striving to become a better person.
That's good to hear. And Lori, I was just thinking, something that, sort of stood out in the piece was, that you were very emotional during, in the courtroom. And I just wanted to know, how, I was just wondering, how that felt, watching your son in a courtroom, and if you could sort of, tell us more about that experience.
I would probably say it was probably one of the worst days of my life. Seeing my son in a jumpsuit with handcuffs on, shackles, walking in a courtroom, knowing that I was not going to be able to see him for a very long time, knowing that he was going to be incarcerated, not knowing what was going to happen there, not knowing what was going to happen to him. As a person, I had no idea about Long Creek, but as I said, I am so happy and so proud of him that I can't even tell you, but I broke down. I couldn't help it. I mean, he's my son. He's my baby. He always will be, and I miss him more than I can even say, and I'm just, again, I'm so happy, and I'm thankful to Long Creek.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And I guess sometimes I like to sort of put my, or at least try to, step into someone else's shoes and just trying to imagine for myself, if I was ever put in a situation like that, how my parents would react, I would say I have a pretty good relationship with both my parents. I mean, they're divorced, so I don't get to see my dad that much, but I was just trying to think, how it might change if I was, to become incarcerated at a time, and And I guess it's really great for me to hear that, like, despite being incarcerated and, like, that whole process, like, that, you know, the relationship between parents and, like, a child can, you know, be improved for the better. And, like, I don't know, I guess that's nice, you know, to hear. Hassan, do you have any other thoughts that you might want to add?
Yeah, I mean, it's really an inspiring piece right there, Corey. I'm saying that you took the time to want to change as a person and better yourself and have a good relationship with your parents. Because I've seen a lot of people in Long Creek that just don't want to change, you know what I'm saying? They stick to the same thing. You know what I'm saying? I like to see that you're bettering yourself and that some good has come out of being in jail.
Word.
And so again, Lori and Gary, you know, thank you so much, you know, for taking time out to speak with us. And it's really great that, you know, you're so supportive of your son. So, you know, thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank all right, and Corey,
for doing what they've done for my son also.
Oh yeah. Corey, you had you wanted to share with us a piece, but before you did, you had something to say.
Yeah, I just want to take this time to shout out to my dad, Gary, who's been a huge support for me. Also my mother Lori, she's just awesome. Also got a shout out to my fitness instructor Rocco from LCYDC, keeping me in shape. Much love, bro.
All right, and now we're going to be playing a piece. I hear it's your dad's favorite. It's Inside Looking Out by Grand Funk Railroad.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and listen to it.
I'm sitting here lonely like a broken man. I serve my time doing the best I can. Walls and bars, they surround me, but I don't want no sympathy. Blisters on my mind and hands. I work all day making up a burlap bag. Ocean beating me, driving me wild. I feel happy like a newborn child. Now when my time is up, you wait and see. These walls and bars won't keep that stuff. No.
We're back. Again, I just want to remind all our listeners that you are listening to Blunt Youth Radio. I'm Iris Sangiovanni, and with me now is...
Solomon.
And he is a resident at Long Creek Youth Development Center. They are our special guests for the evening, bringing sharing their stories from an incarcerated youth perspective. We have a piece now that we'd like to play that it was done by a resident, Ja'Cory, and Solomon will tell you a little bit more about it.
From the outside, Ja'Cory looks like a party guy. He's 16, has his own apartment, and seems to be living large. But Ja'Cory's private desire for an average life with a normal family drives him to the edge. When a lucky intervention from his grandmother saves his life, he realizes he has a lot to live for. This piece was produced as part of Blunt Youth Radio's Incarcerated Youth Speak Out project at Long Creek Youth Development Center in South Portland, Maine. Funding was provided in part by a grant from the Maine Arts Commission.
All right, now we're going to hear it. All right, we are having a little bit of technical difficulties, but you know, that happens. We go with the flow. I did want to remind our listeners again to call in. The number is 780-4909. Again, that is 780-4909. So, you know, call in with any questions or comments that you may have. So, Solomon, you know, I've sort of... Earlier this, you know, through today, you know, I've gotten to know a little bit about you, but I don't, you know a lot. So, just tell me and the listeners, you know, a little bit about your experiences at Long Creek, you know.
I've had a good experience at Long Creek so far, you know. I mean, at first, it took me a while, you know, to realize why I was actually there. But, I mean, in my time there, I've learned a lot as far as, you know, who I am and what I want to do. So, I mean, in my point of view right now, you know, I have my goals set and I'm, you know, I'm focused.
That's great. That actually leads us right into the next piece that we're going to play. It's a piece by Reagan, and she's going to talk a little bit about also, you know, how she's changed since she's arrived to Long Creek and sort of her transformation. So without further ado, we are going to listen to it.
Coming into Long Creek Youth Development Center at 14 with no sense of direction, I was a wildfire and there was no way of putting me out. Since being in juvenile detention, I've had to learn the word no and how to act my age, some things I've never learned at home. A lot of people here at Long Creek have witnessed me growing up and making positive changes, so I decided to ask a few of them what they thought. What was your first impression of me?
That you were crazy and hyper and didn't pay attention to the rules, and you're funny.
This girl's crazy. Not crazy like psycho, but crazy like you just didn't care. You were like, f*** this place, blah, blah, blah.
When I first met you, I thought you were crazy at first because you were just like freaking out over something and you're like throwing your pillow at the wall and stuff, and yeah, I thought you were kind of crazy.
My first impression of you was that you were a spoiled little princess who was used to getting her own way, never having to be told no, and screamed like a wild banshee.
Now when you see me, what three words come to your mind?
Compassionate, more focused, and you're funny.
Best friend, trustworthy, funny.
What three words? I love you.
Awesome, funny, sweet.
What kind of impact has Long Creek had on me?
You care now, like you, it like hurts you and you hate, like you don't like getting in trouble now, but when you first got here you were like, I don't give a f***, get me in trouble.
You are less hyper now and you actually pay attention. I've noticed that you are more honest.
I see a lot of change in you. It's like you're really engaged in your program, I see that, and like, you're really engaged in, like, Blunt Radio and stuff, and you're doing really positive things right now.
I think Long Creek has really helped set you up for what life's real expectations are. I think when you came in, you were very young, and you didn't understand that you were old enough to be required to do particular things. I think you've learned the value of the word no. I think you've learned patience. And I think you've learned responsibility, and I think that's made you a really awesome person.
How have I changed?
Well, you don't scream at the top of your lungs anymore. You take the word no a lot better, and you're willing to listen to people when they try to explain to you if they think you've done something wrong. Instead of just immediately jumping into conclusions and being angry and wanting to smack people, you actually are willing to listen, and you've gotten very good at expressing yourself when you're frustrated about stuff too.
You used to freak out a lot and stuff, but now you do a lot of your SOSs and stuff, and like you vent a lot and you ask for help when you need it, and you use your resources really well, and you're just really positive now.
I'm still making more changes, so let's see where they get me. For Blunt Youth Radio at Long Creek Youth Development Center, I am Reagan.
All right. Once again, you know, we want to thank Reagan for her piece. I really enjoyed that she was able to describe herself and describe her transformation through the words of others. And I don't know, that's something I liked about it. But, I mean, also, it's, like, I feel like with, you know, the stories we've heard so far from, you know, Corey and now Reagan, like, there seems to be, like, a transformation but for the good. Like, you know, they're becoming better people. And, I mean, that's, like, really great to hear. Solomon, how would you describe yourself, like, before entering Long Creek? And how would you say, like, you've changed, you know?
I mean, before entering Long Creek, you know, I wasn't rational in my decision-making, you know. I just kind of went with the flow and did whatever. But, I mean, coming to Long Creek, you know, that changed real quick because, you know, everything had a consequence, you know. Basically, we got to learn to do the right thing so that we're successful. So basically, I mean, coming to Long Creek has helped me a lot. I'm more rational, you know. I think of my choices and what the outcomes are going to be. So that's one of the biggest things I've learned.
Mm-hmm. And we are going to be heading into break in a couple minutes. I wanted to let you know that we won't be playing Ja'Cory's piece. It was a piece that was done actually almost, you know, about, you know, a year ago. But you, if you're interested in hearing it, you can look it up on prx.org, and it's A Normal Life by Ja'Cory. But before we go into break, Solomon has a few shout-outs, so let's hear them.
Yeah, I want to give a shout-out to Ace, Curly Jones, MC, AP, and, you know, all everybody I know.
All right, and once again, well, that was Solomon. I'm Iris Sangiovanni. You are listening to Blunt Youth Radio with our guests, Long Creek Youth Development Center. And we're going to be going into break, but, you know, please stay tuned because we're going to be hearing more stories. Actually, we're going to be hearing a piece from Solomon and Hassan, so, you know, stay tuned. Thanks.
Is that the one fighting for your soul? Are your brothers the one that you're running from? But if you got money, forget, cause I want some.
B.I.G. Oh, God. Whoa. Okay, ain't nobody f***ing with my click, 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 click. Ain't nobody fresher than my mama. Click, 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 click. As I look around, they don't do it like my click, 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 click. And all these bad, bad men, they want the B.I.G. Oh, God. Tell a bad bitch, do whatever I say. My block behind me like I'm coming out the driveway. It's grind day from Friday to next Friday. I've been up straight for 9 days. I need a spy day. Yup.
She try and give me that Wu-Tang. I might let my crew bang. My crew deep in that Wu-Tang. I'm rolling with her. Girl, you know my crew name. You know 2 Chainz. I'm pulling up in that Bruce Wayne. But I'm the villain. Man, they kneeling when I'm walking in the building. Freaky women I be feeling. From the bank accounts I'm feeling. What a feeling. Aw, oh, man, they gotta feel. Young player from the D that's killing everything that he see but a no.
Click, click, click. Currently, I was a black male in the state of Maine. For billionaires, it was really hard for me. In my household, I was taught to treat everyone with color. No matter what their color or ethnicity. In my home, no one took the N-word. I'm always my parents instilled in me to learn ways to avoid that racism. I don't want to take the N-word to be good into it. So, I decided to interview a couple of long-term residents to get their views on racism here at the facility.
How is race or racism an issue in Longcree?
I think race
in Longcree is a big issue because there's a lot of ignorant kids here who really don't know anything. And they come here, and every time they get mad, they try to go derogatory and use the N-word against you. So that's the only way they can try to bring you down.
Race is an issue in Longcree. Because there's a lot of kids who think the N-word is okay to be said. He never told who we gonna tell. We top of the totem pole. It's the dream team meets the supreme team, and all our eyes screening only means one thing. You ain't fucking with the click, 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 click. Ain't nobody fresher than my mom. Click, 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 click. As I look around, they don't do it like my click. Click, 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 click. And all these bad, bad men, they want the, they want the, they want the. Break records of Louis, ate breakfast of Gucci. My girl a superstar, all from a home movie. Bow on our rock.
All right, we are back. Once again, you've... Don't mind the noises, just having, Hassan join us in the studio. Now in studio we have all three of our lovely Long Creek youth residents, and we have Hassan, Salman, and Corey. Again, I know I've been telling them, you know, introducing them as guests, but really they are as much a part of Blunt as I am. You know, they are just bring in different perspectives and stories for us, so, you know, they're our partners.
Word.
And so, yeah, this is Blunt Youth Radio, public affairs talk show, also a call-in show, so be sure to call. The number is 780-4909. Again, that is 780-4909. So call with any questions or comments. Why don't we just go around quickly and just say, you know, what's it been like being on the air, being, you know, off grounds? Who wants to start? Corey, why don't you?
being off grounds is it's pretty cool. I mean, I haven't been off grounds in like 6 months, so to wear my own clothes and, you know, put my hands in my pockets and see different people and see where, you know what I mean, the old time. It brings back the old times. It's nice. It's really nice. I love it. It's cool.
Yeah.
Word.
Corey, that you bring up something like the reason, or one of the many reasons I really enjoy having you guys come to the studio and like just sharing your short stories in general, is it like it just it like reminds me of the like sort of the simple things that I take for granted each day, like being able to wear my own clothes. Like that's something that you don't think about, but once it's taken away from you, you know, like you appreciate it. So like it's always a time for me to sort of remember, like, you know, the little things and appreciate them. But Hassan, what's your experience been like, you know, being here, being, you know, off grounds? And
no, I've been off grounds before, but you know what I'm saying, I like this place right here because it's inspiring. I get to see people like you right there. I'm one of the best hosts I've ever seen.
Thanks. Hassan, that's so sweet. Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
you're gonna make me blush.
It's really wonderful here. There's nothing else I'd rather do than be here right now.
Well, you know, it's really great to have you. And might I say that I'm inspired by you. So, you know, like, just, like, being able to share your story and your experiences. And, I mean, we haven't heard your piece yet, but I can only imagine, you know. It's
great.
Yeah. And how about you, Salman?
I mean, this is pretty nice, you know. I always wanted to do something different, so this is just kind of giving me some ideas. I mean, I like it so far, so it's going well. I like it.
That's great. I think we should jump right in and listen to Hassan's piece. Hassan, do you want to just tell us a little bit about your piece?
In Long Creek, I've seen firsthand some racial tension in the units, you know what I'm saying, with staff. So I've decided people need to see it, you know what I'm saying, that racism isn't allowed out here and it's not allowed in there. And mostly I've seen the N-word being thrown around by a bunch of people, and I just like to say this. That word shouldn't be used at all. Just like to put that on there right there. So that's why I did the piece.
All right, we're going to hear it, and we'll talk to you more about it afterwards.
All right. Growing up as a black male in the state of Maine and dealing with racism has been really hard for me. In my household, I was taught to treat everyone with equality, no matter what their color or ethnicity. In my home, no one said the N-word. The morals my parents instilled in me at a young age taught me that racism is wrong and the N-word is a degrading term. So I decided to interview a couple of Long Creek residents to get their views on racism here at the facility. How is race or racism an issue in Long Creek?
I think race in Long Creek is a big issue because there's a lot of ignorant kids here who really don't know anything, and they come here. And every time they get mad, they try to go derogatory and use the N-word against you, because that's the only way they can try to break you down.
Race is an issue in Long Creek because there's a lot of kids who think the N-word is okay to be said by non-black people.
Honestly, like, I don't think it's much of an issue. I mean, me, myself, I'm not racist. If you act the way you should be acting, and, you know, you're going to be treated the same way as everybody that is doing the same thing.
There was another resident that stated that black rappers tend to use the N-word, and some white residents here think it's a right for them to use it. Do you feel that word is a right to be used or not?
It depends how you use it. If you're using it in a derogatory way, then that you should get in trouble, you should get punished for it. But, I mean, if you're just trying to, like, you know, sing a song or, you know, I mean, lyrics, you can't get mad over someone singing a song or something like that. I just don't think it should be used at all, honestly, because it just creates too much problems. One black kid might be cool with you saying it, the other one might not.
And a lot to do with just the residents, but there's some staff that are ignorant too. So the only way to beat ignorance is by knowledge. So we got to teach the people, you know, that just because you're black or just because you use the N-word doesn't make you a bigger person.
Can you describe what the relationship is between residents of different races in here?
Basically, if you're black, you know what I'm saying? I mean, we don't try to hold against anybody else. We just kind of stick together because that's what we're kind of used to, you know what I'm saying? We have that culture background. We just hang around. Usually everybody tries to stick to who they're comfortable with and who they can really hang out with. And for us, you know what I'm saying, just being black, I like hanging out with my black brothers.
Can you describe what the relationship are like between residents of different races?
It's very, there's a lot of tension between white and black kids. You know, the black people want to hang with the black people and play basketball with the black people.
When I came in here, I'm obviously white, so I came in and a few white kids started talking to me, but the black kids just all ignored me because I was just their average, typical, you know, Mainer boy, you know, white, light-skinned and everything. And then we just got this new kid the other night, and he was dark-skinned, you know, mulatto-looking, and pretty much all the black kids went over and surrounded him like a new friend because they were like, oh, this kid's from where we are. And, you know, it's not a bad thing because they're used to that.
What do you think could be done about the race issue?
There's nothing that can be done, sir.
Can you explain why, though?
It's just one of those things that just can't be done, you know? People can't fly. It's just she can't fly. It's the same concept.
There's really been a lot of work on that issue, you know what I mean, just trying to, like, sit down and talk and stuff like that. But, I mean, you know, some kids are just the way they are, and they're not going to change towards other kids. And, I mean, there's a few black kids that I get along with, and it's pretty cool, you know what I'm saying? I have respect for them and everything because, you know, they don't disrespect me, you know what I mean? As long as you respect me, I'm going to respect you no matter what you look like.
What do you think could be done about that race issue?
I think, like I said, we need to teach, you know what I'm saying, because ignorance is bliss. So if we teach the kids, like, hey, listen, all these derogatory words you're using, they're not going to, you know what I'm saying, help you in the future, you know what I'm saying? It's just going to make you always be an enemy, you know what I'm saying? And always kids are like, well, if you could say the N-word, I could say it. No, you can't, you know what I'm saying? You got to get that through your head. You know, you didn't go through 300 years of enslavement, you know what I'm saying? So it's kind of... it's hard for kids here to understand because they come from the middle of sticks and stones, you know what I'm saying? They live in random places. They've never seen black people before. They just watch it on TV. They see rap videos. They see music videos. They're just like, oh, well, if they could say it, I have the right to say it, but it doesn't work out like that.
As you can see, racism is a problem between residents of Long Creek. I think the usage of the N-word should not be allowed. I kind of agree with Mahad that there needs to be more education about racism here and about how much the N-word degrades black people. From Long Creek Youth Development Center and for Berlin Youth Radio, this is Hassan.
Just like that.
All right. Well, thank you, Hassan, for that piece. Like, I mean, you were talking, you know, just about, you know, Long Creek, but that issue, I mean, it's like, it's a universal issue, and it's something that I've often thought of, not so much with the N-word, but with... like, I'll hear girls at school call each other, you know, the C word, the B word, like, just so casually. And it's just, I don't know. It's what it's just hard because I feel like I can see both sides. Like, if you use it in a casual manner, it loses meaning. So, like, maybe that's a good thing. But then also, like, these words, they have, like, such sort of, like, a negative or sort of, like, such a strong... like, you know, history to them, that, like, no matter how many times you say it or in, like, what kind of way, it still can hurt or it still can, you know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know, I guess, like, we should talk more about that. And, I mean, because I know you said that you are against anyone using the N-word, and, I mean... you want to tell us a little bit more about, like, why you feel that way?
I don't understand why people would use that word. People went through 300 years of slavery. And, you know, so much what we've been through, like, people like Martin Luther King Jr. stood up for us. Why, you know what I'm saying? I don't understand why people degrade themselves and put themselves down more, you know what I'm saying? Go back to that, stoop down to that level. You know what I'm saying? We're more than that. You know what I'm saying? I see people as equal. So why go back to that way? I don't understand.
Yeah, I think you bring up, several good points. Like, one is, like, yeah, like, if you put the distinction between, you know, only black people can use the N-word, not white, like, you're addressing that there is a separation, you know what I mean? And also, like, it's just, again, like, you see it so much with, as it was said, like, rappers and just, like, sort of pop culture, like, people just drop the word like it's nothing, but when, you know, as you said, like, there's such a history to it, like, you know, in the times of slavery, that word, you know, it had so much meaning to it, and, you know, so maybe it's, you know... maybe we just need to remind ourselves that, like, the meanings of these words so that, you know, we don't use them. But, I know, Solomon, what are your thoughts about this? Because I guess this will lead us into your piece, too, but...
I mean, in my opinion, people work, you know, really hard to get, you know, people stop using that word. And for it to be so casually thrown around as, you know, hey, this, hey, that, with that word just being thrown around... It's disappointing to see, you know, all that hard work that people went through to get where we are today, and people still don't recognize that. So it's disappointing to me. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anybody should use that word.
All right. And I just want to remind listeners that this is a call-in show. The number is 780-4909. Again, that's 780-4909. So call in. Like, what are your thoughts on racism, on the use of the N-word? Corey, what are your thoughts? I think I heard you in the piece, but, you know, tell us more.
Yeah, I just had a quick question for Hassan. What are some responses you got back that you thought were different or interesting or that you disagreed with?
I really didn't really agree with that. I disagree with that much thing, except for the part where you said that you don't see racism in here. I see it on a daily basis where when a black resident and a white resident get into a fight and, you know, some goes bad for the white resident, they just start throwing around the N-word, like, you know, try to degrade that person. And I also see staff, you know, pick sides between black and white, you know what I'm saying? They usually lean towards the white side. I see that. But sometimes I've seen black staff lean to black residents, so I'm not trying to say that all staff there are racist, but I'm just saying there are some.
Hassan, I don't mean to interrupt, but I will interrupt you. sorry, but we have a caller. We have Peg from Portland. Peg, do you have any questions or comments that you'd like to add?
Actually, I've enjoyed your conversation about the N-word and racism. I think it's very important. But I did have a question for Salman.
All right, go ahead.
My question is, if you could give three pieces of advice to someone from your old high school, what would they be?
As far as what?
Staying out of trouble, what they should be focusing on, outlook on life.
I mean, basically, you know, looking back now, you know, I've come a long way, and three pieces of advice I would give to, you know, people back in my school would be basically to stay focused and to be grateful for what you have and, you know, to just try to push yourself and try to do something better.
Great. Now, if you had younger brothers or sisters, would you tell them anything in addition to that?
Yeah, basically don't do what I did, you know. They're doing pretty well, so, I mean,
great.
Just keep up the good work is what I would say.
I think
excellent.
That was a great question, Peg, and, you know, thank you for calling.
You're welcome.
All right, enjoy the rest of your night.
Thanks, you too.
But Solomon, while you were talking, why don't you tell us a little bit more about your piece and, you know, what's it about and...
I mean, basically, you know, being in Long Creek, you know, diversity is a big thing, you know. There's a lot more white kids than black kids, so, you know, I was interested, you know, to see, you know, how it worked as far as, you know, the administration handling that. So, you know, I decided to talk to people and, you know, see how it all works.
All right. We'd like to go ahead and listen to that.
My name is Solomon. I'm a resident at Long Creek Youth Development Center. I was inspired to do a piece on racial diversity at the facility. I'm a resident of color, and I was interested to learn more about how the facility handles racial diversity. So I decided to talk to a staff member named Willie Stewart, who is the juvenile program manager of my unit. In my point of view, I feel like, you know, black residents have a harder time getting out than white residents. What do you say to this?
No, that's not true. My opinion is, and I'll go with this, the residents here decide when they're going to get out. It's up to them. If they buy into their programs, do their programs, they'll get out. There's no one white resident or black resident that's going to get out any faster than anyone else if they're doing their program. Everyone in my unit is treated equally, and I think the facility as well. There was an accusation against one of my staff members that basically he treats kids of color better than the other kids. And I brought them both in. And what I do when they come into my office, I say, okay, guys, you're in my office. I want the resident to feel comfortable. He can speak his mind and say whatever he needs to say. And basically he looked right at the staff and said, you treat the black kids better than you do the white kids. And this is why I feel like that. And the staff calmly explained to him, well, this is why I talk to those kids. And the answer was basically, and it kind of made sense, in this population, I mean, there are only so many black kids. And there are not a lot of role models for these kids because they come from some really rough backgrounds. Some don't have fathers. And basically he said, I want them to look at me as a role model, someone they can look up to.
How has the increase in racial diversity been challenging for you as a staff?
If you're not proactive in a situation like this, you're going to have problems. I try and be proactive. Basically, before it starts, attack it and let people know that, hey, we're all the same in here. We're going to live together, and we're going to coexist together and get used to the idea. It does perk up once in a while, racial issues, but as I said, you attack them as soon as they start, and that's how you keep them under control.
What kind of training has the facility given the staff to help better understand racial diversity?
Initially, there wasn't a lot of training out there. But one thing I can say about the facility, as times move forward and we see that more races are coming into the building, there's more training that's becoming available. And we're actually seeking different ways to train to help us understand different races and ethnic backgrounds.
I felt like I learned a lot through this interview with Stuart. I'm glad to hear that the administration is thinking about doing more to train staff about racial diversity. I'm also glad Stuart was willing to have such an open conversation with me. From Long Creek Youth Development Center, for Blunt Youth Radio, this is Solomon.
All right. Well, thank you again, Solomon, for your piece. I think it really paired nicely with Hassan's piece. Both are talking about, like, you know, racial diversity and, like, you know, the use of the N-word and, you know, racism. What I liked, this was something that was said in Hassan's piece, that, you know, the way to, you know, sort of fix ignorance is with knowledge. So by, you know, teaching or, you know, addressing, you know, talking more about, like, racial diversity, I think that's, like, a step forward, so. I know, Corey, what are your thoughts, as far as your experience at Long Creek? Do you think there is enough discussion about, you know, diversity there?
I really don't know. There's not enough time to, you know, sit down and talk to each one another about, like, what they think and why they are the way they are, you know what I mean, why they treat people from different color like that. I mean, we've already went over that, but I think